Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Just imagine you're out there in the dark on the edge of Bear Lake, and the lightning's flashing around you, and the wind's blowing, and the waves are getting bigger and bigger, and now you see something coming out of the darkness right toward you, bouncing across the top of the waves. And of course, I had no idea what it was. It was dark. It ended up hitting the beach right at my feet, and it turned out to be a giant inflatable turtle.
Hello, Beyonders. You found your way once again to the Beyond Terrestrial Podcast, your home for the strange, the macabre, the conspiratorial, and the all-around supernatural. I'm your host, Dan Martson, recording just down the road from where Robert Johnson made his deal with the devil. And I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Lee Aaron. Lee?
Hi, guys. I'm coming to you once again from the Bell Witch's backyard, inside the Haunted Barn Studios, and we have a third guest today. Well, I mean, I guess he's a guest. His name is Matthew Havertz. Matthew, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. I wish I came up with something clever of where I'm from. I guess I'm close to where the Bear Lake Monster is from.
Oh, and that leads us into...
That's my old stomping grounds, south of the moon on the banks of the beautiful Snake River.
So, Matthew, I hear that we're talking about the Bear Lake Monster today.
Yep.
And I hear that you have some expertise in that. Can you tell me more?
Yeah. So I love folklore. I love legends. I love what you guys are doing with the podcast and bringing light to some of these stories, especially some of these local stories. And so I grew up in an area in Utah called Kaysville, and there's this big stone cross that was erected sometime in the past, and there's all these local stories around it, and I think that's really what got me into folklore. And so last year, I produced a documentary about a different piece of folklore about the Bear Lake Monster, but it kind of just stems from this interest that I've had. So there's this local legend, and I don't know if you want to have me give some of the background of what it is, but it's a lake monster that's at a lake on the border of Utah and Idaho called Bear Lake, and it's a lake that actually gets hundreds of thousands of visitors each year during the summer season. So, I don't know, the Bear Lake Monster is a fun part of the culture there, and it's hotly debated whether this lake monster exists or not, but there's a lot of people who have said that they've seen something.
So, Matthew, the title of the documentary, it's In Search of the Bear Lake Monster, correct?
Yeah. Yep.
All right, cool. I watched it on Amazon Prime, but there's also on YouTube, you can find it?
Yep. And you can, the Amazon Prime is kind of an extended version or like the full version that has all the reenactments of, or like voice actor portrayals of eyewitness accounts. Plus a few extra pieces from some of the interviews that we did. And then YouTube is a shorter version that's kind of the bare bones, but it's still pretty lengthy. It's for YouTube, it goes into a lot of the detail. So,
well, of course, I think the extended cut is where it's at. You always got to go for the extended cut.
Well, thank you. There's a lot of bonus stuff there. It's fun.
Excellent. So, how did you put this documentary? How did it all come together?
Yeah, that was really fun. So I have a business where I do video production, and I mostly do promotional videos or educational videos or like training videos. Like I've done employee training videos and stuff like that. And I just thought in the summer last year, man, I want to do a video that I would be really interested in. And like I said, I was super interested in folklore. And ever since I moved up to Logan, which is near Bear Lake, it's on the south of Bear Lake in Utah, I thought, man, this Bear Lake Monster thing, there's something to this. And so, to make a long story short, I basically started calling up businesses in the area and asked if anybody would be willing to partner with me or, you know, sponsor the documentary. And I got some businesses showing interest, and then we did a crowdfunding campaign. So I raised money that way. And then being in the video production industry, I had contacts of people to reach out to help me out. So I was able to pay a few people to help with odd ends here and there, but I did most of it, and kind of went from there. So if you want more details, feel free to ask more questions, but that's kind of the long story short.
No, that was really cool. I like you guys displayed some of the monster merch that they had at like the KOA down there.
Yeah. And Kate, so you know what's so funny too is that I actually just got an email today from one of the businesses that helped to sponsor the project, and they're like, hey, could you get us some of the artwork that you used on the documentary? Because we want to make our own t-shirt. So there's even, it just keeps coming. The merchandise keeps coming. And I'm excited. I hope that more videos like this will be, and I could tease to, I had someone email me today about potentially doing more videos like this. And so I hope that it pans out, that there's a few people interested in investing in a future, hopefully, series of videos like this. But yeah, it was fun. There's a lot of people interested in it.
Nice. No, me and Lee love these local stories, so it's cool that it's working out for those businesses, and I think people should definitely take their time and look at the credits when they watch your show to see the people who are into it. But let's get away from the behind-the-scenes stuff. Let's get into the meat of the story here. Can you tell us a little bit about, like, the history of the Bear Lake Monster?
Yeah, so, and this is something, this really starts in a place that I was clueless on. So, like I said, I moved up to the area, and so I had actually, I grew up in Utah, and I had never been to Bear Lake, which is unusual for a Utahan, I think. All my friends had been to Bear Lake, and I don't know, it's something that my family, I guess, we just never had been.
Yeah, unless you grew up in, like, St. George or something.
Yeah. And then in St. George, you go to, like, Lake Powell, which is the other, like, most famous lake, probably. But I'd never been. So my wife's family, though, they take a vacation there every year. They go camping over by Bear Lake, so when we started dating back in 2014, that was the first time I went to Bear Lake. And I noticed that they had, like, Bear Lake iconography all over the place. Like, some of the maps in the area had, like teased to this monster that was supposedly in the lake. And there was, like, stores that had stuff, and I kind of feature a lot of it in the documentary. And I was like, what is the story about the Bear Lake Monster? So I did some research, and I started with Utah State University, where I'm at right now in Logan, has a whole folklore program with archives that I dove into and read about. And I came to find out that Bear Lake Monster sightings allegedly went back to the native people in the area, the Shoshone tribe. Although the evidence of that is a little bit questionable, but there are reports of white settlers saying, hey, the native people told me this story. And I actually contacted the Shoshone tribe today, like the northwestern band of Shoshone, and they told me no one wanted to be interviewed, but they told me that the older people in the tribe did have stories of some kind of monster in the lake. So historians kind of, like local historians here, kind of argue whether there really were native stories or not, but there definitely are reports of native stories. So that's kind of where it starts. But the first actual reported sightings, like written down somewhere, are in newspaper articles in the 1800s. And the stories kind of took off from there. But what I found that was most intriguing while doing all this is that I had people contacting me telling me that they had seen something strange in the lake, like a serpent-like creature or like some humps coming out of the water, even within the last few years. And so that really gave me pause, and I'm like, maybe this is more than just stories. Maybe people are really seeing something, and I don't know. I don't know what they're seeing. I do think that there are things in the lake that we don't know. I think there's undiscovered species, and I can tell you why I think that. You could watch the documentary and find out, but yeah, I think that kind of gives a backbone at least to the stories and the history.
Very cool. So yeah, I was watching the documentary and I loved the uniqueness of the lake. It actually has its own unique species, like four unique species.
Yeah.
That's crazy. I think the science behind it is actually almost as fascinating as the story.
And there's no, with those species, there's, so they call them endemic species when it's a species that's unique to that lake. And that really points to how old the lake is. The most recent literature from geologists and people who study the lake think that the lake could be millions of years old, going back before the last ice age. And the endemic species, those four endemic species, also is an indicator of how old the lake is, because a lake wouldn't have unique species unless the species had enough time to, you know, evolve over time. And so it has to be old enough to be able to have unique species. And not even the Great Lakes, you know, in the Michigan area, have that many endemic species. So Bear Lake really is one of the oldest lakes in North America. It's pretty small compared to a lot of other lakes, but it's old. So,
wow. Mm-hmm. I think one of the geologists on there said something about like one of the 50 oldest lakes on Earth.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that's their estimates. They know for sure. Sorry, and I hope. Tell me if I'm
no, giving go you for too it. Much information. I find the science stuff fascinating. I'm all for it.
They know for sure that the lake is at least 250,000 years old because they've done coring in the lake where they've taken samples of the bedrock at the very bottom of the lake, and they can see the layers of the lake going down, and based on fault movement and the geology of the area, that's where they get the estimates of it being even, you know, maybe millions of years old. So
really cool. Going back all the way to like ancient Lake Bonneville, the aquatic history of the Intermountain West and the Great Basin. Really cool stuff.
Yeah.
Lee, you got any Lake Bonneville stories? You ever go to Salt Lake City and check out the old lake shore on the mountains?
Actually, no. I never went down to Salt Lake City very often unless I was doing something specific. Most of my time was spent up near Lake Coeur d'Alene and stuff like that, and that's another lake that they're just, it's beautiful in that area. So
yeah, yeah. Well, if you go down to Salt Lake City, the University of Utah has a natural history museum, and their displays are excellent, and they actually can point out where the ancient shore of Lake Bonneville was in the valley. It's really cool to check out. Missoula, Montana, same way. You can go down there and check out. There is a glacial lake in that valley. So, yeah, people don't think about, like, you know, 10,000, 20,000, 50,000 years ago. Ice ages passed eons ago. It was completely different. Not the desert it is today.
We may all be swimming then. We'd all be underwater. Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
I'm about underwater here. We've had some flooding in this area, so we're lucky.
It's getting pretty high for us, too.
Yeah. So we've talked about the history of this, about the newspaper reports that came out in the 1800s and how these sightings kept going to the modern day. Can you tell us a little bit about some of the sightings? What are people seeing?
Yeah, so... I think, you know, it's interesting when, okay, so I'll be honest, I think some of the sightings are made up, and I'm just going to say that from doing the research and looking at all the documentations, and I know that some of them are because some people came back later and said, hey, the story that I told was a hoax, I didn't really see anything. But I think that there are a lot that are legitimate. They're seeing something that they can't explain. I think some of the most notable ones, there's a man named Brian Hershey in 2002 that had an interesting sighting that he gave tours around the lake. And then one day he was out on the lake, I guess apparently by himself on his boat, and saw something. And then my uncle, actually, he's featured in the documentary, and I had no idea he had a story about a monster, but he was out on the lake. His name's Mike Havertz. He reached out to me when he found out that I was doing this, and it's kind of a story. He was hesitant to tell a lot of people, and he kind of blamed it on a phenomenon called lake turnover. But I interviewed some of the scientists that I interviewed in the documentary, and they said, no, I don't think what he saw was lake turnover. It probably wouldn't have done that. But he saw these humps in the middle of the night, these dark kind of humps coming out of the water. And he said it caused waves that almost knocked over the canoe that he was in. And he was with friends. So there were other people, I think he said like three other guys that he was with, that saw the same thing with him. And then, most recently, I think it's 2018, a man named Brent Brunson and his daughter saw humps as well in the middle of the day. And there's two witnesses to that story as well. Both of them talked to me and emailed me, and I interviewed Brent for the project, and his interview's in there, and he saw something that he couldn't explain either. And I don't know what they're seeing. I really don't, and I can't explain it, and I haven't seen what they've seen, but I feel like I talked to them long enough to feel like some of their witnesses like were sincere. Like I don't know what they're seeing. I don't think they know what they're seeing, but they're seeing something that they can't explain. But again, I think other people see things that are made up, and or they're trying to make up a story because they're trying to get attention. And I feel like with any kind of legend that happens, people make up stories too. So,
That's awesome.
I don't know what they're seeing. I think that's I don't know. I think they're sincere, but I don't know what it is.
We'll be right back after this quick break.
Evening, ma'am.
Hey, y'all.
What can I do you for?
Can I have a glass of Chardonnay?
I'm sorry, darling. We don't serve that here.
Any Merlot?
I'm pretty sure you don't want these feet going nowhere near them grapes.
Alrighty, how about a craft beer?
Oh yeah, we got plenty of crap beer. Which one you want?
No, not crap beer. Craft beer.
Oh, no, hell no. I'm pretty sure the bar down the street serves that.
Okay, well, what do you serve?
I'm glad you asked. Welcome to the Backwoods Barcast. We serve up moonshine, cheap beer, bottom shelf liquor, and stories even harder to swallow. Join Nick.
And Brittany.
And the janitor, Steven, as we discuss Southeastern mysteries and mayhem, including but not limited to UFOs, true crime, the paranormal, and much more. So knock four times, grab a stool, let the bar talk commence, and as always, drink more beer.
Yeah, you know, I was watching the documentary and I was taking notes. I knew we were going to be talking to you. And when I saw Mike's interview come up, I was like, oh, this guy must be related to Matthew.
Yeah.
And that's really interesting to hear that he reached out to you and had this story that he had never told before. That's really cool. And then I thought Brent's interview was great. And Matthew, with your permission, let's check out a clip.
And on August the 9th, 2018, we were out in the lake. It was mid-afternoon, probably, and we were not close to the shore at all. We were way out in the middle of the lake on the Utah side, and there wasn't any traffic. Probably there wasn't a boat within probably 2 miles of us. My son had fallen, and we had stopped the boat. I was driving the boat. My daughter-in-law was there. My adult daughter was there. And then I had four grandchildren on the boat with me. But my son, my adult son, was out on a wakeboard. He had stopped. He had fallen. And so we were sitting still in the water. And basically, we were just sitting there. And I'm sitting at the driver's seat. And I looked out in front of the boat about, oh, probably 30, maybe 30 yards. And I saw a big wave, a white cap. And I thought to myself, what in the world would cause a wave when there's no boat traffic or anything like that? And then immediately after that, I watched something come out of the water the first time. And I would say, Matt, I'm just guessing, but this whole experience probably lasted maybe 20 seconds, 20 or 30 seconds. I wish I'd had the clarity of mind of grabbing my iPhone and taking a picture or a video, but of course I was so shocked. Above the weight, probably I saw 4 to 5 feet of this animal. And my first thought was, this is fresh water. And I grew up, you know, on the coast, Gulf of Mexico coast. And I said, there's no whales in that, shouldn't be a whale in this lake. But I saw this, whatever it was, come out of the water, go down in the water, come up again. It did it three times. The second time that it came out, my daughter said, Dad, look, what is that? So anyway, this thing comes up, goes down. Now, this thing was black. There was no scales. It looked shiny, like a tortoise or maybe like a shark or a tortoise. But this thing had to be probably at least 40 feet long. I didn't see any. It just went up. Went down, went up and down. Did this three times, and we were totally shocked. My grandkids and my daughter-in-law, they were facing the other direction. They were sitting in the front of the boat, looking back the other direction. But my daughter and I both saw this, and immediately, what I did when this thing went back down in the water the third time, I said, "Well, I'm going to try to get closer." So I started the boat up. I said, "Lance, let go of the rope." And so I ran that direction, and of course, that was the end of it, you know. But basically, we can't describe what we saw other than when I turned the boat in that afternoon, I asked the guy at the marina, I said, hey, tell me something. I said, I saw something today on the lake I can't explain. And the guy was real nice. He said, well, tell me what you saw. And I told him what I saw. And he said, look on the wall. And so I looked on the wall, and there was a newspaper article. And I don't remember, Matt, it's still there. You could go to that marina and look. But they said in 2013, there was a sighting. And he said, you saw the Bear Lake Monster, is what he basically said. And I didn't even... I've never heard of a Bear Lake monster.
Awesome. Yeah, this is a great story. And I think what's so great about Brent's story is it's very descriptive. He definitely can tell that it's not like a school of fish. He has some experience on the water, clearly. It's corroborated by his daughter. This is such a big deal that there's a second witness.
Corroboration is key. It really
yes.
is.
Her statement's in there. So I think this is a great story. One of the other really good stories, Matthew, was Ross Walker's story about the blurry photo he took. You don't know, but we're part of a podcast network called Fourth Hand Media. And one of the big shows in our network is called Blurry Photos.
Wow.
And... I think those guys would love Ross's story, and I think our listeners would too. They should definitely go check out Matthew's documentary, because I really can't do it justice. You have to hear it from Ross himself.
So what you need to do is when you go to the documentary on YouTube, and you just search like Bear Lake Monster or In Search of the Bear Lake Monster, and it should come up. But if you open up the description and scroll down to the bottom, I have a little page there that says other links and resources. And then the first link at that bottom section is local photographers' photos. So you can check out the photos for yourself if you want to. But yeah, so Ross was out on the lake on a stormy day. And so Bear Lake, a lot of lakes get this way, but Bear Lake, when it gets stormy, it looks like... the ocean, like, and the waves come up. I was there once when it was really windy, and I took some pictures of my daughter just playing out on the beach of the lake, and I showed people later, and they're like, where did you go? Were you in California for the weekend, or like, what happened? Because it looked like the ocean at that time just because of how windy it was. So, I mean, you can imagine like these big waves coming in and dark storm clouds, and he sees something on the water coming towards him.
Don't give too much away.
Okay,
is too good. Okay. We got to get people to watch. This is so good. You already got people hooked. You got them sold
on
it.
And he
took I want to watch it again.
So
yeah,
you can check
the blurry
photos
to prove it. Oh my gosh, yeah, that's a really great thing that there's links to the story. Yeah, people got to check it out. This is so good. So let's get into the skeptical analysis of the Bear Lake Monster, which there's plenty to go around. It turns out that Joseph Rich, one of the reporters who was putting this out in the Deseret News, later went and recanted the tale, said it was all I wrote it down. A wonderful first-class lie.
Yeah.
But the sightings continue, so...
Yeah, the sightings continued, and that's something I think is really interesting, but... But yeah, no, he, and it's interesting too, the sightings continued in his day too, in his day and time, people continued to say things. And, you know, maybe, I mean, you could argue, you know, maybe they were, the people of his time were just, their eyes were playing tricks on them because of the lies that he told about this monster. But the people who never heard of the Bear Lake Monster and then later said that they saw something, it's like you can't really give that same explanation with. But yeah, Joseph C. Rich is actually the first one that officially documented the stories. And then like years later, near the end of his life, he came out and said, I was just making it all up. There's no Bear Lake Monster. So yeah, that's probably the biggest... evidence against the Bear Lake Monster.
Well, obviously, then that answers the question. Problem solved. Why are we talking about this anymore, guys? I don't understand. Like, it's all fake.
Yeah, and that's something that I feel like that Dr. Lynn McNeil goes over is that legends wouldn't survive if there wasn't debate about it. And mm-hmm. the best legend, like, so you get like the giant squid, for example, and it's not really, I mean, people aren't really that amazed by it anymore. I mean, they are. I mean, it's really cool, but we've got footage of it now. And so because we know that it's real, it's not as fun of a legend anymore. And vice versa, if you disprove something like definitively, like, yes, this does not exist, we know that, it's not fun anymore. So I feel like legends thrive on that debate back and forth. Is it real? Is it not real? Here's what the skeptics say. It's like X-Files. You have to have Scully and Mulder, right? Did I get their names right? So...
Yeah, you did get their names right. also, one like the way that you mentioned that, it just made me think of something that I just thought in my head would be kind of funny. Now, my great love is Bigfoot, but I have to say, what would happen to the Bigfoot researchers if it was finally proven that he did exist? Like, what would they do at that point? They're going to celebrate for like 6 months and then not know what to do with themselves. They're just going to be like,
it would put a whole industry out of business.
It would put a whole industry out of business. Sorry about that. Just that thought came to mind. It was really like,
yeah.
Yeah, but no, Matthew's exactly right, and there's part of this in the documentary about how tales of the Kraken turned into the reality of the giant squid. And you see depictions of the Kraken and sea monsters as giant squids in a lot of folklore, except for Clash of the Titans. Like, you remember the Kraken from Clash of the Titans, Lee?
Yeah, it looked like, do you know what it looked like? It looked like a Pokemon to me.
Like, or like a really buff giant creature from the Black Lagoon sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Now are you talking about the old one, was it Harryhausen one, or like the new one, the remake?
I think I'm talking about the Harryhausen one. Didn't it look like a big rock with arms and legs? Like, am I just thinking of the wrong thing? I'm in the wrong universe, aren't I?
The old one's like stop motion. Right? And okay. The new one's all, like, crazy CGI.
Well, I remember this, the new one being all crazy CGI.
Yeah. Now, Matthew, what was the special effects budget in your documentary?
Oh, just like, well, let's see. I paid an animator, and he's awesome. His name's Ron Jensen. And this was right up his alley, because he loves this kind of stuff. And he did an animation of a monster creature. He kind of took a lot of the descriptions, some of which are kind of contradictory, and he tried to put it together and then animate a creature together. I paid him a few hundred dollars to help us out, and that was, and then I did the rest for editing things together. So it was a low budget, but we tried to put some stuff in it. So
I was truly hoping you were going to say something like, three bottle caps and two peanuts. That's how much we had for this. It really did come out great.
The little animation of the monster, you used it in the credits too,
yeah.
Right? Just for a little bit. I stopped, I rewound it and watched it again. And I was like, oh, you know what? You know, when you're watching the documentary, you kind of get engrossed in it. But then when you get time to watch the credits, you're like, hey, that's actually pretty neat.
Yeah. And it was fun. And Ron did some other little animations for us, like some of the hand-drawn stuff. I could point out some of the segments that it's at, but he did a few other things. Not animated, like moving, but he did some drawings too for it. So it was fun.
Oh, that's really cool. We've been working on building up our art base for merch and all kinds of stuff. We are working on expanding out, so... I love artists. I love all the little stuff. There was one little story I noticed in one of the signs that's featured in the documentary that the monster had a name.
Yeah.
Isabella? Is
yes.
that right?
So they did a vote in the community. I can't remember how many years ago, but they I think it was like mostly like kids voting. But they asked to like submit names, and then they voted on the best name, and Isabella won. So that's the official name, I guess, for the monster. Yeah.
That's good. Because I've heard a story of like, I think it was an English boat that is now named something like Captain McFarterpants or something like that because they put an online boat.
No. It was Boaty McBoatface.
Boaty McBoatface. Sorry.
Yeah, come on. That's a classic. You know, at least you're right. At least it did happen before the internet. Who knows? But like, was Barry just a little too on the nose?
Yeah,
Barry the Barry Lake
yeah,
Monster.
Yeah, and I got it here. I don't know that, but I don't know. Maybe it was a little bit too on the nose there.
I mean, because Nessie, Loch Ness, Bear Lake.
Yeah,
It sounds good to me, and you could make it Barry, and it'd be kind of goofy, and I just like it. But you know what? I'm not an elementary school kid voting on a, you know, maybe back in my day in the third or fourth grade, I would have been like, oh yeah, Isabella, yeah, sure.
I'm trying to think of
famous figures named Isabella. I wonder like if there's any celebrity that the kids were like, oh yeah, that's...
No, I don't think... Well, I mean, Bella from Twilight?
Maybe, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, well... Isabella, Queen of Spain?
You guys don't remember Isabella McBoatface? Like, just... Sorry.
Oh,
this
yeah,
is why
yeah.
I'm here. Matt, I'm ruining your interview. I apologize.
No.
I haven't insulted another state yet. So we're better than normal.
I'm having fun. This is good.
No, this is good. Well, and the cool thing about it is, we're going to have a little fun with it because it is a story that is kind of out there, right? But it needs to be talked about. The talking about it's what keeps it alive.
Yeah. Well, and I think that you never... I don't know. I kind of go back and forth on how I feel about some legends. You know, my dad loves Bigfoot as well. He has theories on Bigfoot. I love hearing him talk about it, and I go back and forth like, oh no, Bigfoot's no, there's no Bigfoot, and then yeah, maybe something could exist, but that's what makes it fun, right? So,
yeah. Well, Lee, do you want to tell him the interdimensional Bigfoot theory?
Well,
and refresh any listeners who haven't heard it.
I'm pretty sure Bigfoot is an interdimensional being. That would explain a lot of things. Like, for example, you never find Bigfoot skeletons. Like, he just... And I don't even think he does it on purpose. I think he may just accidentally shift between dimensions, not realizing it. And his home dimension is where he spends most of his time, but occasionally he slips into ours. So...
That makes so much sense. I've never thought of that before, but that's gotta be it.
And that's actually part of our logo.
It's an explanation for... Shifty. Yes, the interdimensional Bigfoot. Shout out to Shifty. That's actually... This interdimensional theory is an explanation for, like, aliens and all kinds of things. And who knows, maybe even lake monsters, right?
Yeah.
Plesiosaurs accidentally shifting through a rift in space-time. And that's how they end up in Loch Ness or Bear Lake or wherever.
There actually are story. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Matt.
Oh, I was just going to say that makes sense too. Because I don't. Do you guys remember from the documentary the guy who wrote the children's book? And he like, there's this hole between Bear Lake and Loch Ness. So
yes.
So I don't know if you guys. I don't know if you were very familiar with the Bear Lake Monster before this, but that's one of the funnest stories that people like to tell about the Bear Lake Monster is that Bear Lake is like, you know, the seasonal home for the Loch Ness Monster or something, and that's what it really is. So
I must have
the interdimensional theory that, that it's not really going through all the way through the Earth. It's just going through a different dimension to Loch Ness.
Yes, a rift in space-time. Yes.
Now,
this
is... now there's another theory on that that they that people do talk about, which is the time slips and other things like that. There are stories out there of people like finding themselves in a different time and place, or sometimes in the same location, but hundreds of years before, during that time frame. There's another story of a young lady that was hiking up in California, and she claims that she like somehow shifted to a time right after a wildfire, and she found like a burnt down. Old, burnt down, like, what is it, cabin? Like, what, the ones that the fire lookout stations. And she found that was all burnt down and dilapidated. And then she walks back the way she came and she returns back to where she was. She tries to take people up to see it and it's gone. Everything's just,
wow.
The watch station is brand new, been just rebuilt. And it turns out that, like, 10 or 15 years earlier, there was a huge fire that swept through the whole area. So
wow. You know, it reminds me of, like, one of those old ghost stories where, like, someone stayed in a hotel and then, like, and then they try to go back the next day and then the hotel's gone. Like, you know, like, those kind of stories. Like, it's like...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you know, yep. Everything is word of mouth. There's no proof, but at the same time, it's like, wow, that's such a cool story. And if you think of... there being some overarching explanation, dimension shifting or time shifting or what have you, that can kind of explain it. Time shifting still fits the Bigfoot aspect if you think about, what's his name? Gigantopithecus. He was in North America around a couple million years ago before humans were here. So
interesting. Yeah.
This is our grand unified theory of the paranormal.
Interdimensional shifting or intertime shifting.
That's really cool.
And yeah, slightly more plausible than like the hollow earth theory because that's been scientifically pretty well debunked.
But you know what hasn't been proven
maybe
yet?
Maybe we should do a show on the hollow earth. That'd be a good one.
Maybe. Or the flat earth. The flat earth one is one that is, you know, that's still up in the air for me. I'm not sure. I'm going to take another drink of this.
Oh my goodness.
Wait,
wow. We are completely off topic.
Wait, if the earth isn't flat, is it square?
Could it be square?
Square. I've been pulling for a tetrahedron earth, but it doesn't look like that's going to come out, so whatever. No, this has been awesome. I love talking about it. We love talking about the lore. We love throwing out some of our stuff. So anyways, let's see. Oh, lore. That was the subject. Legends. You mentioned it a little bit earlier, Matthew. There's a clip. From Dr. Lynn McNeil. We've been talking about legends. Let's kind of wrap it up with a more high-minded, philosophical conversation about the nature of legends.
Yeah.
I think Dr. McNeil's clip is a great summary. Let's go to that and check it out.
There doesn't really need to be consensus for a legend to thrive. And in fact, the more disagreement there is about a legend, the better that legend does sometimes. Legends are a genre of folklore that rely on discussion, back and forth, disagreement, debate, consideration of what the possibilities are. And that's what makes legends so cool. as a form of folklore is we get to try them out for ourselves. We get to have our own experiences with them and add to that body of lore. It's about this community of experiences and stories and ideas and beliefs and doubts and skeptics and hoaxes and all of that stuff coming together to form this really shared central point of identity.
So yeah, this is a great clip, Matthew. Tell us a little bit about your thoughts about what Dr. McNeil said about the nature of legends.
Yeah, so she, I totally agree with, you know, that idea that legends wouldn't survive if there wasn't that back and forth conversation. It's interesting though, because there's so much more to folklore than just legends too. And, oh, I hope I kept it in. But if you go to YouTube and see the playlist we have on the Bear Lake Monster, I put, I believe, her full-length interview that I did with her on YouTube, so you can watch the whole thing and some more things that she said. Folklore is everything from, you know, why you hold your breath when you drive past a cemetery, to why you knock on wood when, you know, you say something that it could conjure up bad luck, to even just stories that people tell or memes that people share on the internet. But the interesting thing that Bear Lake has that, and I didn't come up with all of this myself. This was from talking with people in the folklore department at Utah State. They're the, you know, people who devote their lives to this, the study of folklore. But the interesting thing about Bear Lake that makes it special is that it's a place that you can actually go to and have an experience yourself. Whether it's real or imagined, or it's just standing on the shore and thinking of the Bear Lake Monster, there's an actual place. And, like, haunted houses do that. Cemeteries. You can go and have an experience somewhere, and it's tied to a physical location. And not all folklore is like that. Not all folklore has a physical location you can go to. But I think that's also what helps the Bear Lake Monster legend thrive.
Well, one thing about about those local legends and things like that is how the towns capitalize on that legend. And it definitely brings commerce to the town that wouldn't be there otherwise.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, and yeah. We did a whole thing on the Bell Witch in Adams, Tennessee. That's a really great story. What's that? What's the town with the Mothman Festival, Lee?
Point Pleasant, Virginia. West Virginia.
Yes, yes.
Then great there's stuff, the Hopkinsville Little Green Men's Festival.
Yes.
Let's hear from some of our friends at Fourth Hand.
Elijah, are you ready to bring on the weird?
Yes, Will I Am. Are you ready to bring on the weird?
Did you just make a Will I Am joke?
Yeah, I did.
Nice. I'll allow it. Anyway, we're just a couple of harmless guys digging into weird things we don't know much about.
We're just trying to figure out what the hell is happening in the world outside our homes.
Do we get things wrong?
Without a doubt.
Are we learning from those mistakes?
Not anytime soon.
Are you entertained by the crap we're talking about?
Of course. That's why I always listen to the show.
You listen? Alright, what do you like to listen to about the show?
I like aliens, conspiracies, cryptids, NWO... shadow government, you name it.
What? But, oh, hold on. Do the aliens come from inside the Earth instead of interstellar travel? What made the conspiracy start? Why did that cryptid evolve to do the things it does? Who runs this NWO?
Listen in as we dive into all manners of subjects as we bring on the weird.
You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and Reddit. You can listen to clips of our episodes on our YouTube channel.
Listen, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts and Podchaser.com. You can also listen to us on Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever else you listen to your favorite podcasts.
That's all right. I love what you were saying, Matthew, because this is something that I picked up on and I took notes on. What's so great about Legends is that by retelling them, we can participate. But then by going to these locations, we can, like, immerse ourselves and participate.
Yeah.
And, like, become part of it. Maybe you'll see something. Probably not. But, you know, you get to go to a place that has a unique geography, beautiful lake, excellent water sports and activities. If you really want to search for the monster, you can get on, you know, some scuba gear and go dive down there. All kinds of opportunities. And just like you can go to Adams and take in the Bellwitch play, just like you can go to the Mothman Festival, just like you can go to Kentucky, just like you can go to H.H. Holmes' house if you're into, like, true crimes and murders, like, all kinds of stuff. And that immersion, that participation, that actually really builds on the legend.
Yeah. And I think, too, one thing that's cool about folklore and legends is that it kind of provides a way for time to test stories to see if they stick.
Oh.
And I feel like not like you can come up with like the best story, the best idea, the best book, you know, the best movie, but you know, audiences will decide if it sticks or not, whether or not you put your heart into it and your soul into it. And folklore just kind of naturally evolves and becomes that time-tested story that people like too.
Oh, yeah, and stuff you'll do without even realizing it, like, you know, throwing salt over your shoulder when you spill.
Yeah.
The story just becomes ingrained in your life, which is really awesome. And, I mean, we talked about Clash of the Titans. They're still having blockbuster films made about, you know, Perseus and the Kraken and Medusa. And hopefully the Bear Lake Monster is one of those stories that stands the test of time.
Yeah.
Especially in these rural communities, you know, they need that extra little kick. So, wow, Matthew, thank you for coming on. Is there anything that you want to shout out, direct our listeners to, or just remind them of where they can check out the documentary?
Searching on YouTube for the Bear Lake Monster, it's one of the first things that comes up, at least in my search results, but if not, you can search for In Search of the Bear Lake Monster, and it should come up, and on Amazon Prime 2, the same title, In Search of the Bear Lake Monster. I think I just want to give a shout-out to all the people who helped make this possible, because I couldn't have done it without the business partners that we had, the people who donated money to the crowdfunding campaign, and I have to give a shout out to my wife for supporting me through this crazy project and a lot of crazy days editing hours of footage together. So my wife's Melissa, she's awesome, and everybody else that helped us out, Lucas and Ron and everybody else, Jameson. So thanks to everyone who made it possible.
No, very awesome. And Lee, we'll have to hook up your sponsors in the show notes so people can see who helped you out, and give some links to the documentary on YouTube and that sort of stuff, so everyone who visits us can go see who made this possible, Matt. This has really been an awesome talk.
Absolutely. Cool. Absolutely. And what we can try to do is add that to our website as well, so there's even more information about it, so there's links and stuff that you can go through. So it won't just be in the show notes, but hopefully it'll be specialed on the website. So.
Cool.
Yeah. And feel BeyondTerrestrial.com.
Yeah, and feel free to take any of the links, any of the links that I've linked to, link to them if you want to. So,
okay.
Oh yeah, I definitely want to check out that full interview with Dr. McNeil, because the parts I saw were awesome. So, I'll actually have to delve through your playlist there and check out the whole thing. Guys, we've been talking with Matthew Havertz, documentary filmmaker. It's In Search of the Bear Lake Monster. Check it out on YouTube, Amazon Prime Video. Thanks for coming on, and we'll hopefully talk to you later.
Hey, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to Beyond Terrestrial Podcast. You can check us out on Apple Pod, Google Play, and other major podcast platforms.
And if you want to keep up with the show goings on, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at Beyond T Pod. That's Beyond the letter T Pod.
And as always, you can get all of that information as well as show notes and episodes as they come out on BeyondTerrestrial.com. That's right, we got the .com.
And if you want to help out the show, give us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts or a like and a review wherever you listen to Beyond Terrestrial.
You've been listening to a Fourth Hand Joint.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.